Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last night at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Indiana Governor Mike Pence both accepted the nomination for vice president and sung the praises of Donald Trump. He asked the assembled delegates for unity in getting Trump elected in November.
You have nominated a man for president who never quits, who never backs down, a fighter, a winner. Until now, he's had to do it all by himself against all odds. But this week, with this united party, he's got backup. And on November 8th, I know we will elect Donald Trump to be the 45th president of the United States of America.
Today, we're talking about how the RNC is coming off in its quadrennial gathering this year in a state where he has been shunned by the Republican governor and dismissed by GOP voters in the primary. Joining us is Ohio State University political scientist Paul Beck. Welcome back, Paul.
Glad to be with you, Ann.
And by phone from Cleveland, Columbus Dispatch reporter Randy Ludlow. Welcome back, Randy.
Thank you, Ann.
We heard the crowd booing Texas Senator Ted Cruz last night, but I imagine you had to be there to get the full effect. How did the delegates, by and large, respond to his speech? What was considered more the highlight than anything?
Well, it was stunning, and I certainly think the Trump organization well knew that was coming. Mm-hmm. Cruz likely knew that his refusal to endorse Trump would not be well received. There were reports that delegation whips were indeed whipping up people to boo toward the end of his speech if he had not endorsed Trump. And led by New York, that's indeed what happened. It was kind of stunning the way the boos and chants to endorse Trump spread through the queue.
How did Ohio delegates respond?
Ohio delegates, at least compared to many other delegations, were relatively quiet when it came to that. As we know, this is a delegation that strongly supported John Kasich for president. He received all 66 delegates, and they voted for him. So that it's kind of a reluctant backup conversion to Trump. Many of the delegates are not enthusiastic about him, but reluctantly are going with him as opposed to the alternative to Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm. Listening to Ted Cruz, it was as though we had jumped ahead in time. It's been labeled the first campaign speech of 2020. What's the conventional wisdom? What are people talking about? Is his decision to stick his neck out in this way?
Well, certainly I think he's trying to keep a profile alive for 2020, obviously calculating that Donald Trump loses. Governor John Kasich is in that same camp. He's going to be very active in supporting Republican congressional and Senate candidates across the country. Indeed, he's flying to Philadelphia tomorrow for a fundraiser for a Philadelphia area congressman, Patrick Fitzpatrick, who is trying to succeed his brother in the U.S. House. He's addressed a lot of delegations, made a lot of speeches this week. He's so high profile. He's keeping his name out there, trying not to sully his skirts with the Trump brand. And indeed, he says, I'm holding my head high and I'm comfortable with the decisions I've made.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Republican National Convention still underway in Cleveland this week. Wraps up tonight with the acceptance speech, the formal acceptance speech by Donald Trump for the thanking his delegates for the Republican nomination for president. You just heard from Randy Ludlow. He's a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch covering the convention there. Also with us, OSU political scientist Paul Beck. If you have a question or comment about the Republican National Convention, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. It was stunning. I don't know, Paul Beck, if anything like that's ever happened before where someone's been given the go-ahead to make a speech like Ted Cruz did last night without endorsing the nominee and getting that kind of reaction. What do you think? And it was agreed upon with the Trump people. What do you think's going on there?
Well, it was highly unusual. Highly unusual, first, that they slotted him on such an important night of the convention. And as in many ways, the keynote speaker of the night. He went on far longer than was scripted for him, probably consciously. he also was the lead-in to Mike Pence and stole a lot of the thunder from what I thought was quite a good speech from Mike Pence. So it was very odd. It makes you think that the Trump organization and the Republican National Committee don't really have good control of this convention. Every night there's been something that has emerged as the lead story coming out of that particular night that has not been positive for the Trump campaign.
It's almost as if, and Randy, chime in, I mean, it feels like they wanted the discord.
Well, you have to wonder about the means behind the madness. They send Cruz up there, and he willingly goes, knowing he's not going to be well-received if he doesn't endorse Trump. They're okay with that. Cruz, showing no humility at all and a huge ego, is willing to go out there and deliver what might have been the seminal speech of his career to the end to keep his name and profile out there, get it all fall apart. Amidst the boos, late in the speech toward the end, Donald Trump strolls into the arena, thumbs up, points to the crowd, waves all around while Cruz is up here under a shower of resentment. It's certainly an incredible scene. It's hard to know if they seem to thrive on chaos in the Trump camp.
Right. Now, you mentioned Donald Trump was in the convention center walking in, thumbs up. What do you make of that? That was, again, I don't remember ever seeing that before.
It was certainly unusual. He stayed around to hear his son's parent speech, and then he departed. When he entered, I don't know if that was a bid to try to take some of the heat off Ted, or what was at play there?
Paul Beck?
Well, it's a puzzle to me. You know, there's spinning going on, of course, as to from the Trump campaign as to what was really happening there and what they had screened and what they had screened. I don't know what the answer to that is, but it doesn't play well. Mm-hmm. And one of the major purposes of the convention is to give a real push or launch to the campaign. And it'll be really interesting to see whether the Trump campaign gets any kind of a bounce out of this. It's not been a good convention for them, night after night. I mean, each night there's been something
that
has stolen the show, that
has
nothing to do with supporting the Trump candidacy. It puts a lot of pressure on Donald Trump himself tonight to be able to try to rectify this in his convention speech. We'll just have to kind of wait and see if he's able to do that.
Randy, what in the world is going on with the story about Trump, particularly Trump Jr., reaching out to the Kasich camp and asking, you know, early on back in May, asking him to run with Trump?
Well, the New York Times broke that story. It was amazing it had not leaked before now from the Kasich camp. Their source would appear to be from the Trump camp. But once it broke, we were able to quickly confirm that and add some details. The story supposedly goes that despite their bickering and John Kasich and Trump denouncing each other, that Donald actually respected John Kasich and thought him a good man and a good leader. And that supposedly even before Kasich dropped out of the race, there were these feelers up to a dozen times in April and May about him potentially becoming Trump's vice presidential running mate. Obviously, they're not on the same page. Kasich said, no thanks. You know, we're two corporations that are very different. This merger isn't going to work. It was kind of amazing, and I think it kind of underscores, you know, the fluidity of which the Trump people move from this to that, and no consistent focus sometimes, it seems. But it's certainly an extraordinary event. It never worked out. When Trump tweeted, I did not talk to Kasich about that. Well, that's true, because they were using intermediaries with Trump's son and some others in his camp talking to John Weaver, who was and remains Kasich's chief political strategist.
There was the issue about they said he could be sort of the CEO of the country. He could be the Kasich could be the chief operating officer of the country, so to speak, run all domestic and foreign policy. And the Kasich operative said, "Well, what would Trump do?" And the response was, "Make America great." I mean, do you believe that?
Well, more than one outlet, including one that's respected as the New York Times, is reporting that. Again, you have to realize you're dealing with Donald Sun here as an intermediary, whether that's actually correct or not, that Trump would actually abdicate leadership over foreign and domestic policy to the vice president while he makes America great again, which I don't know if that's speech-making or what exactly that would entail, but it is somewhat curious.
Paul Beck, ever heard of anything like that?
Yeah, I'm actually skeptical about this in a couple of ways. One is that often there are a variety of intermediaries who are making contacts with a variety of possibilities to kind of feel them out, to see what they would be like, whether they would be responsive to an invitation. But the invitation, of course, has to come from the candidate himself, from the nominee himself. And they usually try to protect the nominee from making such an invitation unless they know it will be accepted. So that's my skepticism is there. My skepticism also is that I'm not sure Trump would be able to honor such a pledge. I can't imagine somebody being elected as president and not wanting to take control over a number of things that he or she cares about.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they might say to the vice presidential running mate, hey, you can have a free hand in doing what you want to do. I just can't imagine that happening. And I think that's particularly the case with Donald Trump.
Randy, it's the last day of the convention. It's going to be a hot one. Do you expect any fireworks? I mean, figuratively, there may actually be fireworks tonight for all I know. But do you expect anything like a cruise moment?
Well, certainly in talking to Ohio delegates and other Ohio elected officials, they believe Trump would be best served tonight to be careful with his words. Do not dwell on Hillary Clinton. Sure, you bring her up, you criticize her, but avoid the demonizing her, avoid the vilification. What Donald Trump needs to present is his view of a positive view of the future of America. Not dwell on what is wrong with America, but what is right with America and how that can be improved and fixed.
Carol in Washington Courthouse, you're on the air. Hi, Carol.
Thank you. I would like to see Donald Trump come out and ask for the vote and ask for people to support him. I haven't heard that. I'd like to ask your guest what he thinks about the fact that Donald Trump seems to put the burden on everyone else. He is not generous in victory. For example, just the last...
I don't want to rush you, Carol, but I only have a few seconds, and I wanted to have Randy Ludlow respond to that. What about Carol's characterization that Donald Trump is not generous in victory and that he hasn't reached out to enough other candidates?
Well, Mr. Trump certainly doesn't lack for hubris or ego. He does, I think, need to perhaps identify himself more closely with the struggling Americans, the middle class. This has to go beyond the angry white men. That's not going to get him this election alone. I think he does need to display a little more humility, does need to reach out, does need to ask for help, does need to ask for America's votes.
Randy Ludlow, I know you're super busy. I thank you so much for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you. I was glad I could do it, Ann.
Randy Ludlow, reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, covering the Republican National Convention in Cleveland this week. Coming up, we're going to hear from an organizer of a nonpartisan group, or multipartisan group, if you will, that opposes Trump's nomination. We'll also be hearing from an Ohio delegate in Cleveland this week. So stay with us and bring your questions, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Lots of news organizations assigned as many reporters to cover the action outside the convention hall in Cleveland this week as they did inside to cover the official business of the Republican National Convention. Outside, protesters of many stripes congregated and continue to congregate to make their points. One Fox News reporter asked several of them about their messages.
Donald Trump will make America safe for a very, very elite group of people who are white, generally already have money, who are capitalists, who are profit from corporations, who do not really need protection in the first place.
Some of the things he's saying is ignorant.
He might be the law and order, but like what type of law and order?
He's just causing more confusion, more hate.
More deportation!
He's talking about building walls between us, sending people back, you know. He's feeding into stereotypes and hate. That's not the language or the rhetoric we need here in this country.
Still with us is Ohio State political scientist Paul Beck. Paul, thanks again for joining us.
Good to be with you, Ann.
And joining us now by phone from Cleveland is Rebecca Pletnewski. She's an organizer for the Stand Together Against Trump protest group. Welcome to the show, Rebecca.
Thank you, Ann. Glad to be here.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but your group is set to march today along the official parade route and then gather with others through the evening to protest until Donald Trump completes his acceptance speech tonight. What's your message?
That is correct. We will be marching at 1:30 on the official parade route and then rallying at Public Square at 6 p.m. Through the end of Trump's acceptance speech. And our group came together originally as a bunch of young professionals and healthcare providers in the Cleveland area. We were just so deeply disturbed by the hateful, negative rhetoric that Trump had been stating during his campaign. And we just felt compelled to come together as a group and say that Trump's values are not American values. They're not our values. They're not Cleveland's values. And we were in a unique position as Clevelanders with the RNC being here to make our voice heard.
And as I mentioned earlier, it's nonpartisan, or there's people of all different political stripes with you.
Correct. Our members span the political spectrum from, liberals to conservatives, Republicans and Democrats. We're an independent expenditure PAC, which means that we don't endorse any candidate, nor does any candidate endorse us. And our members are Black, white, Muslim, Christian, Jewish, and at this point, generational. We have a large core group that spans, young professionals to retirees.
One of the things people were worried about going into this convention was the shadow cast by recent tragedies, and of course, Baton Rouge, Dallas, Minnesota. Is that been on your mind? How do you think that that's affected the tone outside the convention hall?
Well, I think those events in this country bring to light even more the need for groups like ours that are committed to bringing a peaceful, positive message to America, that Trump's values of racism, encouraging violence, xenophobia, Islamophobia, and driving wedges between groups of Americans is not what this country needs right now. We need a leader who can bring us together as a country and foster healing, not encourage and promote more violence and division.
In your experience there this week, have you seen any groups that look like they were loaded for bear or anything like that, that were kind of, I hate to use these, these analogies, gunning for trouble or anything like that?
In public square, there has been, various groups with various agendas. There have been people exercising their Second Amendment right. Mm-hmm. There's been people who are pro-Trump, anti-Trump, and everything in between. I participated in a couple marches already. Everything has been peaceful, positive, to the point where if you didn't know that it was a Trump protest going on, you would almost think it was a parade.
Paul Beck, the tradition of protests at conventions, how far back does it go?
Probably forever. I don't really know about the 19th century, but
right.
Certainly in the 20th century, in my lifetime, there have always been protests of one kind or another, some of them very light, some of them rather vociferous. You know, certainly 1968 is the one that stands out in my mind, but there have been other years as well. It presents obviously an issue for convention goers because they have to kind of wade through the protesters sometimes. It presents an issue for the law enforcement authorities who really want to try to maintain order and make sure nothing untoward happens. But it's part of the American tradition.
And Rebecca Pletnewski, your group, as you mentioned, is nonpartisan. How does it compare in its makeup to others you've met? What other groups have you met out there that you think are worth mentioning and talking about?
Well, on Monday, we participated in the End Poverty Now March that was organized by Organize Ohio. And that was actually a coalition of many groups coming together with varying messages to bring the focus to poverty and sort of the socioeconomic disparity that exists in our country. And that was a wonderful march. I would say it was between anywhere between 700 to 1,000 participants and very strong voices, very passionate. But that passion never led to any hint or inkling of violence.
Mm-hmm. How have the police been?
The Cleveland police have been absolutely amazing. I commend them. Their training must have been excellent because every interaction we have had with them, they've been present but unobtrusive. They have used de-escalation skills if it does get a little bit heated to use their bike force to come in and sort of create a divide between groups and move them back slowly. I mean, they've been absolutely wonderful and high praise to Chief Williams for a great job.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the Republican National Convention. It wraps up tonight with nominee Donald Trump's acceptance speech. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Right now in the studio with me, Paul Beck, political scientist from Ohio State, and by phone, Rebecca Pletnewski. She's an organizer for the Stand Together Against Trump nonpartisan protest group. Patrick in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Ann. So I am calling because, you know, there's been a lot of talk about rhetoric. And when I looked at how this primary season started and listening to Trump's language, word choice, and his what a lot of commentators have described as like a stream of conscious discussion with America about the things that he's passionate about and the things that he wants to fix and things like that. My concern is, as we get into the end of the season and he gives his speech tonight, that whatever it is that he's saying won't exactly be what he truly believes because he's got so much more coaching than he did when he started. More establishment people are coalescing around him, and so they are going to want to hear more of what will get him elected in the general. And my concern is that the people who are perhaps still on the fence, maybe the 20 to 25% of Americans who don't want to vote for either, that there will be a lot of like, oh, well, he is a good guy after all. But I don't think we can ignore the things that he said already so passionately and so vehemently.
I want to ask Paul Beck this. Unlike really any candidate I can ever remember, in my short life, hearty har har. I can't remember anybody saying so many things that would offend so many people that were so quickly forgiven by his supporters. Paul Beck, is that just that kind of people like that style and they forgive him because he's not a seasoned politician?
Well, it's been a puzzle to me. I mean, I think there is a lot of forgiveness that is going on here. We have to remember also, and this gets back to Ted Cruz's speech, we have to remember that Trump has not only been negative and disrespectful to the opposition on the Democratic side of the aisle, but also to people who are running against him for the Republican nomination. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons that, Cruz may have been unwilling to endorse him has to do with the attacks that, were levied on him by Trump himself.
Against his wife, even.
Against his wife, against his father. I mean, these are things that,
That's right.
I think most of us would feel are beyond the bounds of civility in a campaign. It's okay to criticize the opponent and criticize what he or she stands for, but to pick on the family is something that, just really isn't done or hasn't been done until this year. So the caller, I think, has something there. If Trump is really smart tonight, what he will do is try to give people reasons, positive reasons, to vote for him without attacking the opposition. The convention has been full of attacks at the opposition, more negative than I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And conventions are partisan affairs, so you understand there's going to be a lot of that. But it's gotten beyond the point of criticizing, in this case, Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama for things they actually did that are legitimate issues to raise, to things that are really made up, that just have no substance to them. And they've gotten carried away. You think of Giuliani, you think of Christie, you think of Gingrich in particular. Three people who maybe have no future as Republican politicians except through Trump, who have been the most venomous of all the people on this stage. And the convention was kind of turned over to them. Now, whether Trump is going to come back tonight and try to correct that in a positive way, that I think would be in his interest to do, whether he has the discipline to be able to kind of rein himself in or not, we will see tonight.
Rebecca Plotnewski, what have you gleaned from the pro-Trump demonstrators outside the convention hall? What do you talk to them?
We haven't had much interaction with any pro-Trump groups, to be honest with you. There hasn't been opportunity, I guess, or people that are purposely going to disturb or agitate or, you know, get in the face of opposing groups. It just isn't happening. Hmm.
Is this your first time being a demonstrator at a convention like this?
This is my first time doing anything politically related in my life. I'm a nurse. I'm a mom to two young girls. And most of us in our group have never done anything this politically active ever. And I think that speaks to very strongly how dangerous a candidate like Trump is, that we all felt so compelled as non-activists and non-really political people to come together and do something. And also, you know, speaking to the caller's point, our group also aims to prevent any sort of post-convention rebound in image that Trump is going to, you know, try to do here, because, of course, he's going to have to rein it in if he's smart, I guess, because you can't continue to spew such hateful, violent rhetoric and marginalize Americans, basically, and endorse violence and get elected to the presidency, or at least I hope not. Hmm. So our voice will continue to be out there to let people know who the real Donald Trump is, and to make sure that the values that he's espousing, we remember that those are not American values.
Arthur in Cincinnati, you're on the air. Welcome, Arthur.
Thank you. Really, Rebecca said to an extent what I was feeling and you know, about this Trump person. I mean, and also I really don't understand how anyone of color, in particular black, could even consider voting and going along with his rhetoric. I mean, he's not going to do anything for you. He doesn't like you. And I, you know, I sincerely believe that what your political scientist said, that, you know, his stuff, Keller, with Rebecca, I'm not sure, you know, it just can't be real. He just is not real. I, you know, and the people that are going along with him, I really have some concern about them as well. You just can't be that inept about someone like him.
Inept? And, but he's the Republican nominee.
Say what?
How inept can you say he is when he is the nominee?
I'm saying that to the people who have made him that.
Oh, okay.
That's what I meant.
Gotcha.
That's
okay.
What I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, this is just unconscionable.
Mm. Arthur, thanks for your call.
Yep, you're welcome.
Take care. Paul Beck?
Well, I can understand the sentiment, but there, of course, are a lot of Americans who've been very supportive of mm-hmm. Donald Trump. There is a lot of anger out there and dissatisfaction, and he's been able to channel that into support for his candidacy in a way that Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side was able to do during the Democratic nomination process. Still, he hovers around 40% support level. As I've looked at the polls, it really hasn't gone up over time. Hillary's has come down a bit in recent weeks. I think the Republican strategy, certainly his strategy, is going to be to attack her character and hope that they can drive down her polling numbers mm-hmm. to the point that in November she will not be able to get a plurality of the vote. Now, that means that we're in for a very negative campaign. Further polarization, which in my view we don't need. What we really need to do is come together. I sound like John Kasich mm-hmm. in a way, but what we really need to do is try to come together over the things that we can agree upon rather than to drive each other apart. And in the end, the person elected president has to be able to govern. And if they're so destroyed by the time they get elected after the November election, one wonders about what the next 4 years are going to look like.
Rebecca Plotnewski, before I let you go, what happens now to your group? Is this something, is this a thing, or do you see it kind of falling away after the convention?
When we initially formed our group, we had planned on focusing up until, you know, today through the RNC. And then we started having conversations of, well, what does July 22nd look like? So that's something that we're sort of discussing now among our leadership and to see, you know, we've been overwhelmed by the support and media attention that we have, that we've gotten during this process. And we feel like with the momentum we have and with the attention we have, and maybe we should continue to use that and make our voice heard. So we'll see. We don't know for sure, but we just right now, today is the day. We're focused on our march and on our rally, and we're very excited to exercise our First Amendment right and show off the city of Cleveland and stand together against Trump.
We'll drink plenty of fluids.
Yes, thank you. It's going to be a hot one.
Stay in the shade as much as possible. Rebecca Plotnewski, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Ann.
That's Rebecca Plotnewski. She's an organizer for Stand Against Trump. It's a protest group, a non-partisan protest group that formed after the nomination, the presumptive nomination, and now the formal nomination of Donald Trump as the Republican candidate for the president of the United States. We'll continue our conversation about what's going on in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention. Coming up, we're going to hear from an Ohio delegate at the convention and get their point of view. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the gathering of Republican faithful in Cleveland this week at the Republican National Convention. Last night we heard from the likes of Texas Senator Ted Cruz, who did not endorse the nominee Donald Trump. We also heard from Indiana Governor Mike Pence, who accepted his nomination for vice president and who did endorse Trump.
You know, the party of Lincoln was founded on equality of opportunity. And during these difficult days, it will be our party and our agenda that opens the doors for every American to succeed and prosper in this land.
That was an upbeat note from Indiana Governor Mike Pence. By any measure, it's been an unusual convention, shadowed by recent tragedies in Baton Rouge, Dallas, and Minnesota. But other than a few scuffles, the demonstrators at the perimeter of the convention site have been peaceful. We haven't heard from the floor of the convention. That is the rank and file. And still with us is OSU political scientist Paul Beck. Joining us now by phone from Cleveland is Delegate and State Representative Niraj Antani from the 42nd House District in Montgomery County. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Is this your first convention?
This is my first convention, both attending and as a delegate. So it's very exciting that, you know, I'm here in Cleveland.
How has the experience surprised you?
Well, you know, I think we've seen some floor action on Monday with the Rules Committee. And also, you know, honestly, I'm surprised that the majority of delegates seem to be supporting Donald Trump enthusiastically. The contingent that is not is very small, probably, which includes the Ohio delegation. But most people seem to be on board with the nominee.
Some observers have remarked that the Ohio delegation is something of a black sheep in the convention hall, despite the fact that the convention is at home this year in the Buckeye State. What's your impression about how the delegation's been treated?
Well, look, I mean, I think we've been treated well overall. Obviously, we're the host state, and the people hosting the convention are a lot of Ohioans. But look, you know, we're going to continue to support Governor Kasich and what he does and his decision. I think that the Republican National Committee made a poor choice in trying to slam through the rules on Monday and ignore the will of grassroots conservatives. But, you know, that's just, to me, another example of the establishment going after what the people really want.
Are there any other states out there, I mean, like Ohio, that where a majority of the delegates were not for Trump and share a lot of your sentiments about this?
Well, over, I think, nine states signed the petition to ask for a roll call vote. In fact, actually, when the rules were slammed through, the Colorado delegation walked out and the Utah delegation made a motion to ask for that roll call vote. So both Colorado and Utah, I know, are there. And then there's a large contingent of the Cruz supporters, too, throughout the convention.
The delegation was booed when it announced that the Ohio delegation was booed when it announced that all its delegates would go to John Kasich. What did you make of that? What was that like?
Well, I think that was a poor choice from, you know, other delegates from other states. I think it shows the fact that, you know, people think Governor Kasich needs to endorse Donald Trump, but yet, you know, the Republican National Committee and other delegates aren't pushing for unity on their side. So if, you know, we're going to push for unity, then the rest of the RNC needs to do its job in helping to unify the party.
What do you think about the governor's decision not to attend the convention, not to endorse Donald Trump?
I think he's right. I mean, I think he is making a principled decision that he's not ready to endorse Donald Trump yet, just like Speaker Ryan, you know, took time and took conversation to do that. And I think that, you know, you saw what happened with Ted Cruz last night where, you know, he chose to stole the spotlight and then not endorse and got booed off stage. Governor Kasich, at least, is respecting the process and is therefore not attending because he's not ready to endorse yet. And I think that's very commendable.
It sounds like, though, from what we've understand from the reporting on this, that was negotiated with the Trump people that Senator Cruz would not and did not have to endorse Donald Trump in his speech. What do you make of that? What do you make of the fact that the Trump people let Cruz go on anyway?
I mean, if that's true, then that's poor negotiation on the Trump people. And, you know, obviously he's supposed to be a great negotiator, so he may want to hire some other folks. But look, I mean, why would you let anyone on your stage if they're not going to endorse you?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about that earlier, Paul Beck. It still sort of befuddles. I'm befuddled by it.
Well, they may have been hoping that Cruz in the end would endorse, or at least sound like he endorsed. No, it's a puzzle to me. If I were running the convention, I would not allow somebody who could steal the show on Wednesday night by, in your face, not endorsing you. A real puzzle, and I think, evidence that the Trump campaign really weren't thinking hard about what was to their advantage in the campaign. There may be reasons for this. Maybe he wanted to bend over backwards to give opportunities to his opponents during the nomination process, though he certainly didn't do that when the primaries and caucuses were playing out. So it's just a big puzzle.
You know, a lot of times these things, Representative Antani, are these conventions are used as springboards for the future. It's not unusual. I mean, Barack Obama first, you know, hit his first home run with his first speech way back when. Anybody this time around for you catch your eye? Anybody that's surprising you? Any stars in the Republican, you know, horizon?
Yeah, two come off the mind right off the top. First would be Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan both addressed the convention and addressed the Ohio delegation at our Wednesday breakfast. And, you know, I've always been a fan of his, but I think this further solidified him as really our leader and our policy leader in the Republican Party. Second, I would say it would be Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, who addressed the convention on Monday and also addressed the Ohio delegation at our breakfast on Monday. You know, he is so strong on national security issues, you know, as a former, you know, member of the military. And really just, you know, speaks very intensely about them, very passionately about them. And, you know, he's a young guy, you know, kind of like Josh Mandel here in Ohio. And so I think he's a rising star. And, you know, I think he'd be, you know, a great candidate for president or vice president in the future.
Speaking of Josh Mandel, at one of the breakfasts this week, I understand that the name of Pat Tiberi, Congressman Pat Tiberi, came up to run against Sherrod Brown in 2018. What do you make of that? It looks like Josh Mandel's already planning on heading in that direction himself. Is this a battle ahead?
Well, you know, I count both Josh Mandel and Congressman Tiberi as personal friends and really look up to them both. But look, you know, to be honest, this is the problem that we have because we have so many good Republican elected officials in Ohio, you know, who want to contribute more greatly to, you know, the policy impacts of our nation. And so, you know, I hope that, you know, we can perhaps avoid a primary. You know, I'm, you know, close to them both. You know, I've known Josh for a little longer and, you know, as someone who's younger, him and I, you know, connect very well. But that said, you know, I think this is the problem that we have such a great bench for future stars, you know, as opposed to the Democrats in Ohio who really, you know, all they have are the statewide candidates who lost in the last election.
You know, that's an interesting thing, Paul Beck. Talk about having that huge field of candidates for the Republican nomination just a short year ago. It's flown by, hasn't it? But is that a good thing? I mean, I think that Representative Antani makes a really good point. You know, it's great to have something deep and wide, but...
Well, parties have to manage ambition.
Yeah.
And where you have a lot of office holders who have ambitions for higher offices and fewer offices than they can fill, you really run the risk of intra-party battles that are damaging to the party. And we've seen this in the past. I remember when Betty Montgomery and Jim Petro and Ken Blackwell were all running for governor. I think we're going to have that kind of battle coming up in 2018 on the Republican side as well. And sometimes everybody leaves those battles wounded. And it allows an opening for the other party to put its candidate in to that office. So it's a worry.
Yeah.
But there aren't enough offices to go around, and that's going to be a Republican problem. It's a problem the Democrats wish they had,
right?
But they don't have right now. But it's a problem that the Republicans clearly have going towards 2018 and had in 2016 as well.
Representative Antani, what do you hear from your constituents who are following the action back home? Anything?
You know, I've been in constant communication, you know, through social media.
Uh-huh.
And I've been trying to post, you know, as many Facebook live videos and, and tweets as possible. You know, I think they're first just really appreciative that I've been sharing and trying to give them really a behind the scenes look, you know, what celebrities are here and that sort of thing. But, you know, I think, again, a lot of them are just very, very excited that it's in Cleveland, that it's going very safely and securely. And that, you know, it's a celebration for Republicans here in Ohio.
What do you think the Republicans need to do to win in November?
Well, you know, first, I think we need to unify on both sides. And then I think that we need to have a positive conservative vision for our country. You know, I think our speakers, you know, so far at the convention have done a good job of demonstrating that. But, you know, obviously Ohio is the most important swing state, you know, in the country. And, you know, I've worked on the Romney campaign in 2012 and, you know, obviously we were not successful. So know what it takes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, hopefully we see, you know, the campaigns, you know, pop up. I know that Senator Portman's campaign has already been extremely active with over 2 million voter contacts. So, you know, I think he's doing very, very well. And we'll see about the presidential.
And when you talk about the conservative vision, are you talking about that, the stripe, the conservative, the social conservative vision or the fiscal conservative vision or both?
I'm talking about both, but communicating it in a way that it really resonates with middle class, blue collar voters. You know, in 2012, one of the things we did not do a good job of, and I will, you know, I think we should all admit this, is communicating to the average voter. We talk too much about, in my opinion, you know, the wealthy, but we should talk more about the average everyday, you know, worker and how our policies will help them, you know, get better opportunities and more independence and more freedom. But I, you know, I think our policies do that. I just don't think our candidates do a good job of talking about that.
Paul Beck, is the middle class blue collar voter the typical voter in the United States?
Well, probably not anymore. You know, middle class is a broad swath.
Right.
If you're thinking about people who are of working class background, white, who have been trending towards the Republicans, not happy with the Democrats, they're an important group. And they're a group that's very much in play, I think, in 2016. But there are plenty of other groups around as well. And an effective candidacy, I think, has to appeal much more broadly than that. And I, you know, I would add, too, though, I think what's been missing from the Republican convention so far has been a powerful voice of what the party stands for. Some speakers have done that. I think Ted Cruz actually did that last night. The platform does that. But there's been very little talk of that. There's been much more hammering on what's wrong with the Obama administration and what's wrong with the Clinton campaign. The parties that are not in the White House often take that tack, but they need to be very careful not to make that the only thing that they're pushing. And I think this will be interesting to see tonight as to whether Trump says, hey, there are these reasons to vote for me, and it's not just a vote against Hillary Clinton. It's a vote for me and for the Republican Party and what it stands for. But realizing that Trump himself isn't completely tied in to the Republican philosophy and vision. There are some real differences between him and the traditional postures of the Republican Party.
Representative Antani, what do you want to hear Donald Trump say tonight?
Well, I think Professor Beck actually just hit the nail on the head. I want to hear a positive vision for the country. I want to hear his positive vision for the country. I don't want to hear attacks. I don't want to hear division. I want to hear his conservative, principled vision of how he's going to fix our country.
And are you let me ask you this. When you hit the pavement campaigning this summer and into the fall, is it going to be more about Rob Portman or what? Or do you see yourself being a big campaigner for Donald Trump?
Well, you know, I mean, here's the fact is that, you know, first I'm the chair in Montgomery County for Senator Portman's campaign. So,
okay.
You know, a lot of my political time is going to him. And there, but, you know, we have an office in Centerville in the Dayton area for him. I haven't seen any Donald Trump staff in Dayton. I haven't seen a Donald Trump office. And so, you know, perhaps when they do hire more staff or have staff in the Dayton area and an office, then, you know, we'll see. But until that, it's kind of hard to campaign when you don't have a campaign office.
And that's a very practical issue, right, Paul Beck?
It is indeed.
Hmm. Well, Representative Niraj Antani, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much.
It's Representative Niraj Antani. He is a delegate to the Republican National Convention from the Ohio House, 42nd Ohio House District in Montgomery County. And Paul Beck, as usual, thanks for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Glad to be with you, Ann.
Paul Beck, political scientist at Ohio State University. Thanks for listening. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Shyla Knott, All Sides interns Summer Cartwright, Vaughn Hunt, Sydney Schaefer, and John Schlichting, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Thanks again for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.